Boom, baby! Yes, sir!
Hello and welcome to another edition of our weekly podcasts. I'm Mark Boyle. Slick Leonard is here, and we'll get right to it, Slick. Last week we talked about how the Pacers got started in 1967. You helped run a tryout camp. The first year, though, you weren't the coach. But in 1968, you were the coach. You were hired by Mike Storin after the season had started. And we talked a little bit about your relationship with Mike last week. Since then, though, Mike has passed. So let's just start with this. Can you share with us your recollections of Mike Storin, both on a personal level and how much he meant at the start of the Pacers franchise?
Mike was very important. Very important. I mean, anything you were going to do with the Pacers back then, hey, you had to go through Mike Storin. And, you know, Mike was the one big thing I can say about Mike Storin. Mike Storin was a winner, boy. He wanted to win in whatever he did. If it's going to be a new franchise or whatever, Mike Storin was a winner. He was a winner. And he stayed right in there and battled some tough circumstances and got the franchise going.
One of the things he did was, at least based partly on your recommendation, hire Larry Staverman as the first coach. And so the first year goes by, the second year starts, and the team is struggling, and they decide to make a coaching change. So Mike approaches you. How much thought did you give to maybe passing on the opportunity?
Well, you know, I was in business at the time. You never really get basketball out of your blood. Basketball was had been my life, and you never get it out of your blood. And when he came up with that, I had a real nice business situation going with the Herb Jones Company here in Indianapolis. And when he told me that come in there and coach, you know, I really started thinking about it. I thought to myself, I said, you know what, I could probably, you know, it'd be kind of fun to go in there. You know, I said, that league's not going to last more than a couple of years. And I'd go in there and have some fun, get back coaching and still run the business and do everything. So that's the way it came up. I told Nancy, I said, you know what? We had just built a new home in Kokomo because it was the center part of my Herb Jones territory. I said, you know what? We could go in here for a year or two and probably that league will fold. But I said, we can make enough money to furnish our whole house.
Did you make enough money to furnish your whole house?
Yeah, I did. I did. I made enough money to furnish the whole house. boy, I'll tell you, I look back at all that, Mark, and I look back at the ABA, and I look how it built itself up and up and up and up and up to the point where we had as many good players as the NBA had.
Well, the first ABA-NBA All-Star game, or more to the point, NBA All-Star game after the merger, demonstrated that, and we'll get to that in just a bit. But I want to go back to 68, when they made that coaching change, as is almost always the case, the team was losing. But by the end of the season, you were winning on a regular basis and had become one of the better teams in the league. How did you get things turned around?
Well, I went in there, Mark, and I tried to pull these guys together. The guys that we had, I tried to pull them together. You know, winning was always big in my basketball life, you know, wherever I played, high school, college, when I played in the NBA all those years, winning was big to me. And I had a pretty good idea of what it took to win. And so I had to get all that across to these guys, to the guys that I inherited on this team. And we got it going. We got it going. And by the end of the year, we came down to one big ball game. One big ball game at the end of the year, and that was against the our arch rival Kentucky Colonels, and the town was all set up for that. I mean, this was an exciting time, and it was a great ball game, and we beat them. We beat them, and that was really that game. That particular game was the kickoff of the Indiana Pacers.
Other than the fact that you won that game, what do you most remember about it?
Well, it was a tight ball game. It was a tight ball game right to the wire, and I can't really remember a lot about it, but I know in tight ball games right to the wire, we at that particular time, that was before we got George McGinnis, we went to Roger Brown a lot, and but we had a good offense that we had put in, and we had good rebounding, we had good defense, so games where you're going to have to come up with a good one to win, and we did.
You know, you mentioned that the league, by the time it reached conclusion, was full of really good players, but even back then, you had two Hall of Famers in Roger and Mel Daniels, who had come in that Minnesota trade. Who did Kentucky have at that time?
Well, you know, I'm trying to look back at what Kentucky had, and the one player I remember that they had that was one of the keys on their ball club was from Indiana. He was from Southport High School. He just recently in the past few years went into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Name is Louis Dampier. Louis Dampier was a great shooter, tough guy, and he was the best player. I can't really remember all those players on that first team. I remember later on as they progressed what they got, but those first years, Daryl Carrier, they had another guard by the name of Daryl Carrier out of Western Kentucky, and he could shoot lights out on you too, and he would. He'd shoot the ball every time he got it. I can't remember the players that they had in the front line, but it was a big ball game, and that set the stage for the Indiana Pacers to go ahead and become an elite team.
You had said earlier that you were skeptical about the survival of the ABA. When the Pacers became a championship contender at that stage, did you become more optimistic about the league in terms of its ability to survive?
Well, the first few years, I'd say the first two, once we won our first ABA championship, It appeared then, at that point, that this league was going to make it. And you know, it's like going back to NFL and the AFL, and both leagues make it. So this was a case where both of them are going to make it in basketball.
Can you put this into perspective for us? Your franchise was winning. There were others that were doing well, but every year franchises would either fold or move, and there was always a level of uncertainty about the league. Was it the case year to year that you wondered if the league would survive? Did you have to go through that every offseason?
No. Early on, yes. Basically, we had some ball clubs down in Memphis. I've never felt to this day, that New Orleans is a basketball town, and New Orleans has been in the NBA for a long time. But there were teams, and really, when you look at it, Mark, if you go back and really look at it, the NBA today. Today, there are 30 teams, 11, well, 15 of those teams, half of those teams were ABA franchises. And 11 of them made it during those years. 11 of those. So really, when the merger comes, I think the first step was when the NBA tried to set us up in 73. They tried to set us up. They thought they were going to embarrass us. The NBA hated the ABA because it gave players coming out of college a chance to negotiate contracts in two spots. And the NBA didn't like that at all.
You specifically cite 73 and say that the NBA tried to set the ABA up. What do you mean by that?
Well, we set up the New York Knicks won the NBA championship, and we won the ABA championship, and so they wanted to set up an exhibition game between the two teams. And I thought their thinking was, well, you know, we're no match for the New York Knicks. They'll come in, they'll kill us. So, but the game was set up. The game was set up, and we played them.
Was it like an exhibition game, or did the players approach it differently?
No, it was not like an exhibition game, and we didn't play it like an exhibition game. From the very start, we had a noon luncheon at the Indianapolis Athletic Club downtown. Bill Bradley, who was a starting forward on that New York Knicks team, got up and said, well, the boys from the cornfield, and once he said that, he said, we're going to challenge the boys from the cornfield. Once he said that, he got his team in trouble, I tell you. He got them in trouble, and I can remember very well that Roger Brown said, he said, Slick, he said, let me have Bill Bradley. And Roger hit him with 22 in the first half.
Now, they had a really good team. They had Hall of Famers just like you did.
Mark, if we go back and look at that ball club, they had Dave DeBuscher, Bill Bradley forward, Willis Reed in the middle, and Earl of Pearl Monroe. And give me the other guard.
Walt Frazier.
That was their starting lineup. They had a good ball club. But as the game went on, by the end of the third quarter, we had them down 15. So they knew then that the ABA was alive.
What happened in the fourth quarter?
They made a comeback at us, and Red Holzman, bless his soul, he's passed away since. We went down to the – it ended up being a – I can't remember exactly, Mark. Maybe you can remember better than me, but it was something like a 4 or 5 point ball game.
So that was still a good 3 or 4 years before the leagues merged. By then, there was hostility, and I want you to share this with us because you've mentioned it over the years from time to time. There was a general hostility, mostly directed by the NBA to the ABA, but you've mentioned more than once that you felt like Red Auerbach was sort of the leader of that. What did you mean by that?
Well, Red was big time against the ABA. He was against the ABA. I can remember even when we went to the when the merger came, we went to Nancy was running the front office. She was running the front office. She had 12 or 13 people in the front office, all of them very talented. We went down to the league meetings down in Florida or somewhere. And Angelo Drosos, owned the San Antonio Spurs. And he came over to my table at the meeting there, and he said, Slick, he said, why don't you make a presentation on the three-point shot? Which was very simple for me. In that I said, you know, the fans, the basketball fans in Boston, Philadelphia, Chicago, Los Angeles, they're no different than the fans in Indianapolis, in San Antonio, in New Jersey. There's one more. Who else went in the merger? There was 14.
Did you say Denver?
Denver, yeah, Denver. I said the basketball fans are no different. And I said, this three-point line, I said, right now, I said, in the NBA, I said, if a team has a 10-point lead with 2 minutes to play, you can see the fans start heading for the doors. I said, well, you're not going to see that happen. You're not going to see that happen with the three-point line. I said, a team can come back in a hurry, in a heartbeat on you with that three-point line in the last 2 minutes. Well, anyway, it came down to a vote. Everybody went for it except one guy. and you know who that guy was.
I imagine it was Red, yes?
It was Red Auerbach. He's the only guy that went against. And you know, the amazing, this was the type of guy. He didn't fool me at all because I had played against the Celtics for years. And he and I weren't real good friends back when I was a player. We had a couple incidents happen when I was playing with the Lakers. But he went against that. But then look at the guys that he got on his ball club after that 3-point line was put into the NBA. Look at the guys he got. Larry Bird, heck of a three-point shooter. Danny Ainge, three-point shooter. I'm trying to think of another big guard who could shoot the threes that he had.
Well, he had many guys over the years that could shoot threes.
Yeah, he had a bunch of guys who could shoot the threes. And they used the three-pointer. They used the three-pointer. Now, they had the good, real good front line with Larry and... Parrish and McHale. They had a real good front line, but they also had a bunch of three shooters. So, you know, that's the way that happened. And Red, probably till his dying day, had no feeling at all for the ABA.
So over the years, as the merger became a reality, and then the ABA guys and teams established that they were every bit as good as the NBA and that the merger was good for everybody. Did Red ever soften his stance? Did you ever have a chance to sit down and talk to him about the differences that he had with the ABA?
No way. Because I had a bad, you know, back when I was coaching the Baltimore Bullets, I had a player by the name of Terry Dischinger out of Purdue. And first of all, Terry Dischinger was Rookie of the Year. And that got Red Auerbach really upset because he thought the Rookie of the Year should have been John Havlicek. Well, Terry was the Rookie of the Year. Well, we had a game, and... Red always had an enforcer, and one of the first enforcers in the NBA, and I'm trying to think of his name, Jim Leskatoff. Jim Leskatoff, thank you, honey. Hey, Nancy,
why don't you just put Nancy on? We'll talk to her.
Yeah, well, you should talk to Nancy. Hey, I'm going to tell you why you talk to Nancy, Mark, and you well know, because this franchise wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Nancy.
That's right.
But anyway, Red sent the enforcer in, and I knew when he sent Leskatoff off the bench, I knew Terry had 15 points in the first quarter at that time in Boston Garden. And they're going down the floor. Terry's going down the floor. Luskatov comes behind him, and takes his fist and blasts him in the back of the head. Knocked Terry to the floor. When that happened, I went right down to the Boston bench. And I grabbed Red Auerbach by the shirt. And I said, I don't know if you want me to say you.
Yes, go ahead. This is good. Go.
I said, you get Luskatov out of him, or I'm going to kick your right here. And the funny part of that was, you know what the funny part was? I saw the fear in his eyes. But anyway, because he was a bluffer anyway. But anyway, Boston had a player by the name of Sam Jones who became a great player. And Sam and I had been in the Army together, so we knew each other real well. Sam was on the bench at that point, and they showed a picture of that later on, and Sam was over there laughing like hell.
I want to get into some of your championship teams, and we'll do that next time. But let's close today's visit with this. You've referenced this from time to time, and you just mentioned Nancy, and I want you to be a little bit more elaborative on this. We see women getting more and more involved in sports at the executive level these days, to the point where it's still not the norm, but it's hardly unusual anymore. But in those days, it was not only unusual, it was unprecedented. And as far as I know, your wife was the first female executive in all of professional sports. What did she do for the Pacers in that front office role?
What did she do in the front office?
Yeah.
Well, she took it over. She took over the front office. Any dealing, I was the coach. I handled the players. Not any dealings that we had with the NBA, she became good friends with David Stern. She came over to me just now and said she was the acting general manager. See.
Well, I think from hearing you talk over the years, it's more than that. She was the actual general manager, correct?
Yeah, she was.
Okay.
She was.
Now, here's my real question. If she's the general manager and you're the coach, you're responsible for the players and all of the personnel dealings, when it came time to negotiate a contract, did you have to go to Nancy?
Yeah, we...
So how were those negotiations?
We did have an attorney, and so we sat down and then we had meetings, and then Nancy sat in the meeting. And I showed up, and the attorneys had to negotiate the actual money because we didn't have any.
Well, next week when we get together and visit again, we'll talk about some of those championship runs and the great teams you had in the ABA. Always a pleasure, and it's good that you incorporated Nancy into our visit this week. We should actually have her on for a few minutes next week. How would that be?
Oh, no question.
Right.
She was, you know, I look back, Mark, and I know darn well that there wouldn't be that arena down there and a franchise there for her. And I know that.
We all know that.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll talk next week, my friend.
Talk to you next week.
All right. Always a pleasure. Thanks.
Bye.
Next week we'll get into some of those championship teams and how Slick related to the players and the success they had, all of that to come. We appreciate those of you who join us on a weekly basis or whenever you can. We'll be here for the next little while as we continue to explore what happened with the ABA and then on into the NBA with our good friend Slick Leonard. For all who contributed, including our producer Pat Boylan, I'm Mark Boyle. Thanks. Stay safe.